Hey, what's up? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let There Be Talk. Today is July 18th, the Monday. And of course, like every episode, this one is sponsored by my fantastic El Cajon Harley-Davidson sponsor. How great are they? I don't care where you live in America. Get your motorcycle from El Cajon Harley. Especially if you're in California, no excuses. The coolest dealer in California. And they're huge comedy fans, and they're also thinking outside the box by advertising on this podcast. So I want you guys to show them that this advertisement worked. Hit them up. Hit up my boy Greg and Brett and say, hey, man, I heard about it on Let There Be Talk. El Cajon Harley down in the San Diego area. Worth the drive, believe me. Also, if you want to get your bike customized, maybe some handlebars or rims or any kind of cool stuff, hit up El Cajon Harley. Here's something cool they do right here. First Saturday of every month, bikes, bands, and bikinis from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And also, they got the lowest tire prices guaranteed. So if you need some new rubber, hit up El Cajon Harley. I love these guys. And they're the official motorcycle sponsor of Let There Be Talk. And I'm pretty happy about that. I love these guys. They're just cool. They're rockers and they love comedy. And they love motorcycles. So yeah, perfect sponsor. Thank you, El Cajon Harley. Everybody hit them up. 619-444-1123. Ask for Greg Riley. All right, guys. Thank you. El Cajon Harley. Yeah. Another episode of Let There Be Talk. It is Monday, and I'm on my way to Cincinnati to open up for Alice in Chains tonight. That's going to be fantastic. And then I got to fucking jump on a flight at 3 a.m., fly back real quick to Los Angeles to do the El Rey gig. Del Rey at the El Rey with Bill Burr just got added to the show. Insane. It's Bill Burr, Maron, Anthony Jeselnik, Joey Diaz, Nate Bargatze, me, and we're going to have Jeremiah Watkins do a little hosting, and my good buddy Nico will be spinning some fucking rock and roll. So don't sleep, El Rey, Tuesday, 7 p.m. doors, get tickets right now before it's sold out. That's Tuesday night, I'll be flying back, and then I'm back out with Alice in Chains for the next week or so doing dates. It's gonna be I can't even wait for the second half. It was crazy. I did a couple shows and I'm like, I'm ready to get back out there. Anyway, I hope you had a great weekend. How was everybody's weekend? Mine was fucking cool. Friday night I did four shows. Two at the Comedy Store, one at the Laugh Factory, and then the super cool show. I opened the live at that the live That Metal show at the Whiskey with my good buddies Eddie Trunk, Jim Florentine, and my guest today, Don Jameson. Don, what a great guy. All three of these guys are fucking cool dudes. Just rock connoisseurs, rock addicted rockheads. Rockheads. I'm so out of it. I'm doing this so early in the morning before my flight. It was great. Opened up the show. They did like a live That Metal show at the Whiskey. And little Jake was there. If you didn't hear the episode where I had the Whiskey band booker on, that's Jake, Sunset Jake. He was there shooting photos. All kinds of cool people there. The landlady went. Heidi the rocker landlady went. And it was cool, man. Went on, did some comedy. Then I brought up Eddie Trunk. DJ Will was there. They did Stump the Trunk. Jim Florentine and Jameson did some comedy. And it was a great night. We rolled out of there about 2:30 a.m. And yeah, awesome. Saturday night, a headline at Westside Comedy Theater, Santa Monica. And what a fucking great crowd that was. So good weekend, all in all. Let's see, what else is coming up? Going to be in New York at The Stand. Everybody asking me when I'm coming to New York. Okay, it's happening. I'm going to be there July, 27th, 28th, 29th, 30th. August 1, 2, 3, and 4. Then I'm going to go see my boy Rich Robinson, and then I'll be home. I'll be back home. So don't miss those gigs at The Stand. Also, I'll be headlining at House of Comedy in Arizona, August 31st through September 4th. That's Labor Day weekend. And what else is going on? Something else, I know. And I just fucking, that's how I am. I just don't plan the intros. I go organic. Let me see what I got here. One real quick quick thing here. I do have the AdamandEve.com sponsor. You want to get some deals on some naughty stuff, go to AdamandEve.com, and for a limited time only, you get 50% off just about any item. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 adult DVDs. Oh, yeah! Plus a free mystery gift. Mystery gift. I wonder what that is. So maybe some lube. And to top it off, they'll even throw in free shipping on the entire order. AdamandEve.com and use the code DEAN at checkout. That's D-E-A-N at AdamandEve.com. Use the code DEAN at AdamandEve.com. Adam and Eve. Oh, yeah. I guess that's about it, man. I thought I had something else, but I guess that's about it. Keep leaving the reviews and subscribe on iTunes. It's also SoundCloud available. And, of course, you know that if you're listening to it. And allthingscomedy.com. I love all you guys, and it's been a great month so far. I hope everybody's doing good. And one last thing. Check out Don Jameson's website and all his tour dates and his Twitter. Fantastic guy. Great guest today. We talk all kinds of comedy and rock. So happy to finally have him on. Here he is. Light the candles. Don Jameson. Hey, what's happening? Here we are, another episode of Let There Be Talk. Great guest today, a friend of mine, a rocker, and here we are in L.A., Don Jameson. How are you, buddy?
What's going on, man?
Been trying to get, last time I tried to get you on the show, you were at NAMM show, I never saw you, you were a ghost. Look, all of a sudden I sound like Jim Florentine.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, I travel with Jim and Eddie. We're out here doing live that metal shows, you know, and you know, we get off the plane and it's like one guy wants to go to the hotel, another guy wants to go get something to eat, another guy, you know, has a girl somewhere stashed away. So, you know, it's just like it's murder trying to get a schedule together, but I'm glad we worked it out, man.
Yeah, yeah, it is brutal, man, traveling with and it's funny because how old are you?
For this podcast?
Yeah. I'm 50.
Yeah, dude, so, 2 months I'll be 50.
Oh, there you
man.
Go. It's great, man. Yeah. It's great to be 50. You get all fucking hurt and old and you get sick and shit, you know?
Yeah.
But the thing is, you travel with guys and over the years you go, man, maybe he's going to be better. They never get better.
Like,
right?
I texted you. Like, I felt like if I'm a 50-year-old man, I had to text you and go, Dean, I really got to take a nap.
Yeah.
Like, that's an excuse, you know?
I think that, you know, once I went down and was at Cabo Wabo, you know, like one of the first times I went down there, I don't know, and realized every day at like 3 they take a siesta. I was like, these guys got it right.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like you recharge your batteries and you can go all the way to the night, you know, through the night.
Same in Italy, right? Because in Italy, they shut down for like 5 hours. They eat a huge meal. They take a nap. And then they go back like later in the day.
Yeah.
Open up for a few more hours. And then they call it a day. It's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, it is, man. So,
But, you know, with comedy, we were saying, you know, like when we just go do our stand-up, it's great because you're just on your own. You're not, you know, and you know, we've been working on combining these worlds of rock and comedy, you know, because it is such a cool combination.
It is.
And it's our biggest loves. But the truth is, like being in a band, that sucks.
I was in
a
band.
Deal with four other dudes.
Well, that's what you're dealing with right now.
Yeah.
And everybody says, you miss being in a band. I go, no, not at all. I don't miss sound checks.
No.
I don't miss fucking loading out gear. I don't miss, you know, how come we're not playing my song? I don't miss, hey, dude, I got to watch my show on Thursday. Can't rehearse, you know?
Yeah, this one's wife doesn't want him in the band. This guy's got six kids. This guy cancels. This one won't come to rehearsal. It's brutal, man.
It is brutal. And that's why I always say rock and roll is a young man's game. Because as a young man, you don't give a fuck about anything except the eye on the prize.
Yep.
And that's exactly, I never changed from that. I always look at the eye on the prize, you know what I mean? Like, hey man, there's something more out there and I'm still chasing it. And other guys, they find what they need out of the band, maybe a chick or whatever their thing is, and then they're off out of the band. To me, it was always about the music, you know?
Yeah.
And same with comedy. It's always about the comedy.
Yeah, it's always about the next show, man. And, you know, that's why you see a band like Aerosmith. And, you know, look, they've been in the trenches. They've been to war with each other, man. And but 40 years, man, it's the same original guys, man. It's like they did stick it out, man. And you were in a band. I mean, I was in a goof band for like 4 years.
What was it called?
Gunfire and Sodomy.
And Gunfire and Sodomy, what year was this?
We did that. You know, we did an EP for Metal Blade even.
Oh, yeah?
And we opened for, it was acoustic death metal. So we opened for Gwar and Six Feet Under and all these extreme bands.
What'd you play?
I was one of the screamers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I loved those guys, but it got too crazy, you know? Like, and of course, the other guys had day jobs. And, you know, and like I said, like the one guy's wife didn't want him in. And my girlfriend at the time didn't care. She was like, yeah, go have fun. I wasn't making any money out of it. We were doing it as a goof. But even as a goof, you know, I started to get real into it and serious about it, you know?
Oh, hell yeah.
And we made a record. Like I said, we did live gigs and stuff. But
so funny your shitty goofy band gets to make a record. And there's bands out there right now in Studio City or in the Valley, just in some shit warehouse rehearsing. No one's coming to see him.
No.
And then a guy will just be like, hey, let's make a band for fun. And all of a sudden, record deal. Oh.
A guy with no musical talent whatsoever.
Guys just shooting themselves over in the Valley, like, really, Don Jameson?
Yeah, but you know, it was just something fun and creative. And you know, that's how the best stuff comes, you know, comes to you, man.
SOD, one of my favorite bands ever, you know.
You just do it you do it for the love of it. You know, if you're chasing the money, man, it's never coming.
Nope, it really isn't. It's that's what I realized my whole life, you know. It's not about the money. I find money other ways, you know, like eBay and stuff for people or what. Any way I can work without a boss. You know, a creative way of like, okay, I can do this during my own time and then do the art thing, whatever. And then if money comes from it, you're like, wow, you know?
Yeah, man, that's the thing. The money, if you don't do it for the money will come.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah, Lemmy said, look, my hero Lemmy, God may he rest in peace.
Yeah.
You know, I hope he's up at Heaven Strip Club right now having a Jack and Coke and a couple blondes on his arms right now. But he always, you know, in his lyrics, he said, which, because I've lived my whole life by Lemmy's lyrics.
Yeah, you love Lemmy.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, I was never driven by greed, you know, and that's, I love that, you know, because if you live your life that way, you'll never make it. You'll never succeed because all you'll be thinking about is that money. Like, I got to get paid. And what we do, man, you got to go out and do it for the love of it, man, because you can't go anywhere if you're just... You know, you have comics. I'm sure you see it, man. After 6 months, they go, I need an agent and a manager. And like, no, you need an act.
Yeah. People, I still, it's 6.5 years, no agent, no manager right now. You know, and people think, when they say that, I know what they're saying. I want to sit home, play video games, and smoke weed while someone does all the work. And that's not how you get anywhere in this gig. You just hang out at the comedy clubs and you get gigs. Yep. You think the fucking agent's going to be like, hey, I was down at the store for you tonight. I got five gigs for it. No, you got to be there. Like last night I was there and a guy said, hey, you want to do next Thursday? Boom. I mean, that's how it happens.
Yeah.
You know?
And then, of course, we, you know, me and Jim became friends with you. And then when we come to town, we put you on our shows. And
yeah.
You know, that's what it's about, man. And you got to, you know, you got to go you got to take that journey the proper way. You can't take shortcuts, because even if you do and you get above somebody else, you're going to fall quick, man.
Oh, man.
Shortcuts are your enemy, because I worked, dude, in the early days, I worked at MTV, man.
Yep.
And I booked comedians, you know, and I could have walked into any comedy club in New York City or anywhere and said, hey, put me up. And they would have put me up and they would have passed me sight unseen and gave me prime, you know, in the 9 o'clock spot on a Saturday night. And everyone who offered it to me, I said, nope. I don't want it, man. Let me go out and work the road.
It's going
to
happen. You know it's going to happen. They see you once and they go, oh, see you later.
Yeah.
And then you're done. You know, people get seen too early in this business. They're like, oh, there's agents. I want to be on that showcase and stuff. Like, people are always like, hey, are you going to Montreal? Are you going to Montreal? And it's like, hey, if it happens, it happens. It doesn't really matter. I'm more concerned about getting funny.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And
exactly.
That's the fucking thing, man.
And we all have different paths, Dean, you know, because, you know, when I started doing comedy 19 years ago, I would have never thought, you know, in 2008, I would end up with a heavy metal talk show with two of my best friends.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, when I started, there wasn't that many opportunities. You had to try to get on Letterman or Leno, or like those were sort of the, you know, they would open doors for you. But nowadays, there's a million channels. There's streaming. There's, you can do all stuff on your own. You can build your own social media empire. So you don't have to fit into a certain box anymore. You know, you go, oh, why don't you try out for Saturday Night Live? Have you seen my act?
Yeah.
I don't
do
impressions. I don't do characters. I'm not political. They're not looking for me, man. Yeah. So I'm not going to waste my time in that area. I know what
gig.
I do best.
Yeah, you got your own gig.
Yeah.
You know, and then your audience finds you, and then you work for the rest of your life.
That's it.
You know what I mean? Now, it's like 20 years ago, you're working at MTV, and what are you doing there? You're booking, like, the comics for the spring break stuff, shit like that, Pauly Shore and those guys?
Yeah, well, I've known Pauly probably 25 years, man.
But what were you doing?
Booking. Yeah, we book them on. Remember the half-hour comedy hour?
Oh, yeah. So how do you become a booker there? You're an intern, and then you know a little bit about comedy, and they say, hey, start booking comics?
Well, I had this unbelievable love for comedians, you know, even from 11 years old.
And who were your guys back then?
Not that young.
Right.
I got into Dice in high school, but back then was Carlin and Cheech and Chong.
Me too, Cheech and Chong.
Even though I wasn't a stoner and I didn't probably get a lot of the references, but yep. I just knew it was subversive. So
I had to hear it.
I was captivated by it, yeah.
I think Cheech and Chong is one of the, I say all the time, because you got the older neighbor who's got some records. And then my best friend was this guy, Eric Gibbs. And we'd go to the house and his stepdad was like, he looked like Sam Elliott, a mask. And I think his name was like Jim or something, you know, like he just had like you just called him his name, you know, but he had records. And then he'd be out in the garage and we'd put them on. And it was like Cheech and Chong, Pryor, Carlin. And those are really the ones I remember. But Cheech and Chong was so, I had just no idea what they were doing. Like, were they in a studio just telling story, whatever, you know? But that one with the car where it slides out and it's got the weed and they're, you know, they're dressed as like the women on the back. It's got the drive-in movie theater one.
Yeah.
You know,
is that a Big Bamboo?
No, that's the one with the big weed rep. Right. It's the one after that. And I own them. I don't even know the name because it's like in Spanish.
Yeah.
But it's got they sneaking guys in the drive-in.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those are really so different than what comedy is to me now. You know what I mean? Two guys. And when I finally saw it about 10 years ago, they got back together. The first time they played the Roxy, there they were on two stools acting out the shit. The dude, you know, Fifi. Hey, Fifi over here with the
dogs. Sister Mary Elephant,
yeah,
all that stuff. Yeah,
they're doing that shit. And I was like, it's so weird to think about how you write that. Like, hey, man, you and I will just go on stage and we'll make up some stories. This one would be about sneaking in the drive-in.
Yeah, but you know how weird it probably was for them, Dean, if you really think about it? Is for them to do it live was probably weird because, you know, they weren't trying to get a laugh in this when they recorded these albums right. in the studio. They were just saying what was they thought was funny. And that's a great lesson for comics. Don't go for the laughs.
Yeah.
And that's a great exercise in doing it. Don't go for the laughs. Don't leave space for laughs.
Yeah.
Like, people will tell you where the laughs go.
Yeah, they're doing studio records back then.
Yeah.
But that is so weird. Like, their timing has to be like, this is where they laugh. You know what I mean? Of course, a lot of the records were live. But when you put those on, they're just studio records. Those Cheech and Chong ones, you put it on, it's like track one, you know? Class! Class! Hey, man, what's happening, man? Hey, you got any weed? All those sounds in the
Fuck
back.
Fuck Charlie's Angels.
Yeah.
That's not a bad idea.
I love that. That shit is, like, great. So, yeah, so you're rocking that stuff.
Yeah.
And you...
And Carlin used to do bits even on his live albums. Like, they'd break away for a commercial, and it would be, a pre-recorded bit. So I always liked that, too. I always loved that he would mix in pre-recorded stuff. But, you know, the majority of his stuff was live. And so that started me loving comedy.
Who's the first guy you see live?
A superstar. I mean, then Dice, you know, when Dice came into my life, it was like incredible. And then that's another thing. It's just like, you know, to think that years later that I would tour with him for 10 years. It's like,
that's wild. You know, I really think about that too, because to me, you've got the three waves of comedy. It's really four waves. The first is 70s with me. It's Carlin, Pryor, and Cheech and Chong, Flip Wilson, Archie Bunker, that kind of comedy, edgy ass shit, the Sweat Hogs, all that. That is fucking primo comedy.
Yeah.
Then you got the next wave, which is Kinison and Dice.
Yeah.
And also a little bit after that of some Jim Carrey and the Fire Marshal and all that Living Color stuff.
Yeah.
Then next it comes Chris Rock and Martin. And that wave. And then for me, it's nothing for a long time until Louis C.K. For me, that's what happens to me. Because once I get back in after my long run of rock and roll. Oh, sorry. And I missed a guy, Seinfeld, which is fucking really critical in my mind because I was obsessed with him and saw him live a lot.
Yeah.
So those guys were my comedians, and there was millions of guys out there working. I never even thought about that, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, wherever you want to pick up, let's say in the 2000s with comics, but whether it's Louis or it's Bill Burr, whoever, but that's the generation of comics now that have built their own audiences in an unorthodox way.
Totally.
So that, you know, Bill could go and, you know, Bill's, you know, selling out Madison Square Garden because he has his fans.
It's unbelievable.
Louis can sell tickets directly to his fans and sell albums directly to his fans. You're not beholden to a record company. You don't owe this one anything, and you own all your material.
Totally.
And because, you know, years ago, man, sometimes it was true. There would be prejudices around the country, man. If you were a New York comic and you went down to the South, you know, they get a chip on their shoulder like this. Oh, what's this boy doing down here? He ain't gonna make me laugh.
Yeah.
And now with the internet, everybody knows what you're about. So then they can look you up. And because if Don Jameson's coming to your town, you couldn't find a clip of me online 20 years ago. But now you go, oh, let me see if I like this humor. And you go, oh, I do. Okay, I'll go see him. Or you don't. So now we're just a big global community. So, you know, you'll always find your fans wherever you go, or they'll find you.
Yeah. It's just an incredible time right now of doing comedy. So what gets you to start? You're working at MTV, you're an intern, you're seeing all these guys, and you say, fuck it, I want to try this.
Oh, dude, man, I would go to the clubs in New York, and I would see everybody, Attell and Louie and
Are you
Nick
living
DiPaolo.
In New York at the time?
No, living in Jersey, man. I was making $18,000 a year. I was eating
Where
dirt.
At?
I was living in New Brunswick.
But where were you working?
I was working in Midtown Manhattan, man.
Oh, so you're working in Manhattan at MTV, 18 grand?
$18,000 a year.
What a bunch of fucking.
That was '88, though, bro.
Still robbers.
I was eating every day. I ate two hot dogs for lunch.
Two hot dogs
off the street because they were a dollar a piece, and that's all I could afford for lunch every day. So for three months of the first summer, that's all I ate until I got a raise. And I was making like $25.
Now, how do you get?
Which is why I'm a vegetarian now.
Oh God, are you a vegetarian?
Yeah,
that's hilarious. We'll get into that. Now, how do you get into MTV? Because what year are we talking? Because MTV, to you and I, was the goddamn Bible for years, man. It was so great. That sounds like a dream job. So you're in Jersey, and you go, hey, I want to work for MTV because you love music, and you go down and they hire you as an intern?
Yeah, they hired me as an intern, and then... And then when I got out of school, man, this woman took a liking to me, and she goes, hey, you find out, go to human resources, find out you get hired on, and that's when all the programming started expanding, and they started doing the Video Music Awards and all that stuff. And so I work with the woman who booked all the talent.
Right.
And so
what was her name?
Drew Wilson.
Drew Wilson.
Yeah. She used to be, it was funny. She was Johnny Carson's assistant for like 12 years.
Wow.
So her Rolodex. Oh, God. Her Rolodex was insane.
Yeah.
Right. So she taught, I learned a lot from her. And then she, especially with the comedy, because she knew I loved comedy a lot.
Yeah.
And, back then, man, everybody had a stand up show. The Weather Channel had a stand up show, you know.
Oh, yeah. Because that's the first big boom of the 80s.
Yeah.
Every bar in San Fran had comedy. You'd just be sitting there, and all of a sudden, a guy would start going on. You go, what the fuck's going on here? And it's just a dude in the corner, like, all right, with a blazer with those patches and white sneakers. They all had their Seinfeld outfit on, like, oh, this is how a comic looks.
Right.
That's why, to me, Bobcat and guys like Kinnison and Dice were like, whoa, that was rock and roll. Because comics all dressed the same back then, Even recently, up to like 5 years ago, there was the hoodie comic. Everyone wore a hoodie. Now I wear flannels and I feel weird because I wore flannels all my life, but then I look in the audience, nine dudes are wearing flannels, but it is what you feel good in on stage.
Yeah. But again, that's also a function of your audience, because I think you're right. A lot of comics, there has to be some kind of visual element to what you do.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have a look with the mustache and your specs and your hat and your tats, you have a look. And my look is, I give off the vibe of a rock guy, and that's how I feel comfortable dressing. That's how
you
I dress every day.
You had big sideburns. Now they're coming back. You shaved them off for a while, huh?
No, they're getting gray, bro.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I got to fill them in with a chick's mascara or something. I got to cut them in real good when I shave, but it's just...
So you're working at MTV and you're getting into the comedy and stuff.
Yeah, I was seeing all these great comics every night. Jon Stewart and Kevin James and all these. I mean, I gave a lot of people their first start, man. Kevin James.
No shit.
Jon Stewart.
Does he talk to you at all?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's cool.
Caroline Ray. Every time I see her, she's like, oh, my God, you're the guy who gave me my first break.
So you book them.
Paulie.
On MTV on their comedy half hours.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then, evening at the Improv was happening. And Caroline's Comedy Hour. There's a million shows. And, the thing I was proud of, man, is, for me, funny's funny. I don't just go, this guy's dirty, this guy's this guy's that. If a guy was funny, man, I booked him. And there was guys that nobody would touch, and then I would book them, and then you'd see, man, oh, they're on Evening at the Improv, and now they're on Caroline's Comedy Hour. And I go, yeah, see? That's what it's about, man, solidarity. Yeah. If the guy's funny, he's funny. It's, you don't want 12 of the same people on the show.
It's true. And it's a little bit like that right now. 12 of the same people,
Boring.
And yeah, it is boring. And it's also good for guys like you and I or Jim or whatever, because when we come on, you'll stand out like, whoa, what is this? But you just got to pound doors a little harder, like, hey, I'm out here, man.
Yeah.
Believe me, people like this. I'm seeing what's going on,
Well, that's what makes you try to be more and more specific with your act.
Yeah.
Is you're like, I don't know what I'm up against out there. So I just got to be as unique as I can be.
Yeah.
Because that way, at least whoever goes on before me, look, we all touch on similar topics, but no one's going to have my point of view, Like if, a bit on my new album is going to be about meeting Kiefer Sutherland and him almost giving me a hickey. Like, what other comic is doing that joke? You know what I mean? So that's the
thing.
Hold
on. Let me see what's going on here. This girl's called me twice from the factory.
All right.
Hello?
Dean's getting a booking right now, ladies and gentlemen.
How are you? I'm in the middle of a podcast, and I go, this girl never calls me. I better take it.
See, this is dedication, folks. This is how you got to do this when you're a comic. You have to be by your phone. You have to answer it. You know, he's probably
getting
spots right now. You know, that's what's important.
Yes. I don't know. That's weird, but it is me. I'll see you there.
Dean's a mover and a shaker. He's got cool tattoos.
Yep.
Works his ass off. And that's how you do it. Of course, I'm ignoring my phone.
I'll see
right
you tonight.
But
thank you. Bye bye.
There he is.
There it is.
I narrated. Everything we've been talking about is just what you did. It's like, hey man, you know, you got to be diligent, man. You can't just rest on your laurels or like you said, expect somebody else to do all your work while you're smoking weed and playing PlayStation. So, you know, I know how it is.
I tell you something. First of all, I love you guys. Some of the nicest guys I've met. I meet a lot of people in the biz, and Jim is unbelievable. And I don't get to hang out with you as much as Jim, but you guys, it's great. And I really feel it has to do with the bond that we have of rock and roll. It's so fucking, it's so deep. And it means so much to us that you just know right away. You go, this guy loves rock, and it'll tear me up sometimes. Like, fuck, man, you just get into rock talk, and it's unbelievable. And I think some of the best times in my life are just sitting around with buddies talking rock.
Yeah.
You know, isn't it incredible?
Well, there's, you know, because it's like, oh, man, you know, I can't wait to, you know, we're going to see Dean tomorrow. I can't wait to talk to him about what he thinks about the whole thing with Axl and AC/DC. Like, because we know, like, you're a kindred spirit with us and that you care about this stuff as much as we do. Like, when we do that metal show and we do the top fives and it drives people crazy because everyone has their own top five and there's no right answer.
Nope.
But we all... The people who get it think there is.
Yeah, who's your top five?
Right, of what?
Of rock.
Of rock?
Can you do it?
Yeah, well, probably Motorhead, Thin Lizzy, Saxon, Black Sabbath, AC/DC.
Wow.
In no particular order.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't got an order
That's
either.
A top five, yeah.
It's amazing to me because I worship Saxon. Seeing him on the Crusader tour with Accept opening, Balls to the Wall.
Yeah.
One of the fucking coolest shows I've ever seen. I've seen him like three times. I even saw him recently with Motorhead on that last tour. It was the last time I saw Motorhead besides seeing Lemmy at his birthday before he passed.
Me too.
Saxon to me is, it's funny, it lives larger with me as a memory than when I put it on. I worship 20,000 Feet, Dallas 1 p.m., Denim and Leather, and a few others, but I own the records and I go, it doesn't really stand up with me, except those five tunes though.
Right.
When I hear them, I go, wow, this is so original. And it had so much to do with that British heavy metal invasion, you know?
Right. Well, they always wrote, you know, they always wrote really sort of, they wrote a lot of historical stuff, you know, which I'm not always looking for a message in the music, but you know, like Dallas 1 p.m.
Unbelievable.
So these guys from England are writing a song about the JFK assassination. And it's just like, wow, that really affected them all the way on the other side of the world. And again, without the internet and all that stuff back then. And Iron Maiden, same thing, man. Those guys write so much stuff about history and stuff. And it's really intelligent stuff, man.
Yeah.
You know, we're not meatheads. You know, like the bands we listen to, man. You know, listen to Lemmy's lyrics. Like I said, I live my whole life by his lyrics. Don't let the bastards grind you down. Like, you know, that kept me going doing comedy
forever.
We
are the road crew, my fan. We are the road crew. I love it, man. I've really been getting into Motorhead lately.
But see, we'll do this for 2 hours.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, and this is why we do bond, because it is special to us, man.
It really is. It's amazing to think about how much rock music, like everything I have in life right now today, sitting in this room, is because of rock music. Our relationship, my comedy, this podcast, me living in Los Angeles, the motorcycles I ride, the tattoos I have, the mustache I have because of the Justice tour of Hetfield, you know, all that shit, man. It's all because of rock, you know, and I can't imagine It's tough too because I do a lot of bits about music, and I can be in some rooms where it just starts to fall flat because people don't have the passion that we have of music. So all of a sudden you go, "Oh, this ain't working," and then I'll just steer out of it. You know what I mean? But when it does work and it's an audience that understands what I'm talking about, this bit is fire.
Oh yeah, well that's the thing. It's like you know, regular comedy club. Yeah, you really gotta feel it out when you start getting into the rock stuff. You keep trying to keep it simple for people. Everyone knows AC/DC, you know, everybody knows Twisted Sister. But yeah, you definitely got to kind of feel it out. And when I go on the road with bands or when we do that metal show live on stage, that's all fans of metal. So
I have
a 30-minute set of just metal and hard rock jokes.
Yeah.
So I just launch into that, you know, because I know the audience is going to get it. I know I could talk about Viking metal tonight at the Whiskey if I want to, you know,
yeah,
which is great. I can't do that, you know, at the Irvine, the
Hollywood Improv.
Yeah, I can't do that over there. So, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's good to have different bullets in your gun. You know what I mean? In the chamber, because you can see the crowd right away and you go, "Oh, this is a crowd that's going to be into maybe drugs and rock and roll." And if they're not, then you've got other stuff. You know what I mean? That's why when I started, I didn't want to be the biker comic. I didn't want to be the rocker comic. I didn't want to be the whatever. I just wanted to be a comedian.
Right.
That's it. That has all different voices from traveling the globe. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's one voice, but different points of view, you know?
Yeah, I think it's good for people to have an image of you, but also know that, yeah, you know, yeah, he's the rock and roll guy, but he plays anywhere. He could play for, you know, in an old age home. He could,
yeah,
you know, do
it. Not an old age home, but yeah.
You know, maybe not a kid's show, but, you know, yeah, you're right, man.
Don't box us in.
Don't box us in completely, because we can reinvent ourselves.
And also with music, too. I had a long conversation with Eddie Trunk, and he is 100% rock. And hell yeah, I love rock, but I love the Grateful Dead. I also love Willie Nelson. I also love, you know, all kinds of soul and R&B from the 70s, Earth, Wind & Fire, Lakeside, you know, any kind of stuff, Terrence Trent D'Arby, Prince, all that stuff. So, yeah, I am rock, but as you get older, you hope that your musical taste, rock takes me places. Like when I listen to a certain band like Thin Lizzy, I go, "Whoa, this is kind of funk, you know, a little bit of you know, it's got some funk vibe to it," or whatever, you know. There's all the influences.
Yeah, so, and obviously very, you know, he always wore his Celtic background on his sleeve, you know, and I love that because that's what differentiates a band, you know, is their point of view. It's like, okay, you know, we're an Irish band,
yeah,
and even though we're just a rock band, but you can hear that in the music, and it makes it special.
Absolutely. I mean, there is the Ramones and AC/DC, and I think it'd be cool to be a comedian known as, say, Attell to me is like AC/DC. He is gonna fucking crush you. You know exactly what it is. It's never going to change. It's always going to be edgy. He's going to be wearing that hat and that blue jacket, and he's going to fucking crush.
And he's going to play the same three chords a million different ways that'll just blow your head off.
And it's just genius.
Yeah.
And he's got hits after hits.
Amazing.
I do love that being your own thing. Your identity is exactly, and your fans are amazing. The problem is trying to get those fans to come out, you know, as for me, they're starting to come out now, but it's really crazy. You need, as much as grassroots as I'm doing it, you do need some kind of thing on the side, like you had the metal show, that gets those couch potatoes to go, "I want to go see that." It takes something more, right?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, yeah. It took, you know, the 8 years we did the show, it took probably four of those before people kind of put it all together. And then, you know, I remember one trip me and Jim went down to this club in D.C., and we went down there, and the club's like in the heart of the city where it's all like tech companies and FBI and government people and all that. And we looked out in the crowd and it's like half the crowd is guys in khakis, phone holsters, blue button-ups.
Yep.
And the other half are guys in camouflage shorts, Slayer shirts, and long stringy hair.
Yeah.
And like, okay, people are getting it now, you know.
You got Dimebag Darrell and you got fucking the FBI.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you got J. Edgar Hoover at the other table.
Yeah. But those khaki people were watching that metal show.
No, they were just in there to see a comedy show.
Oh, I got it.
So that's the point you made, which is, look, you got to perform for both these crowds.
Yeah.
And you can't just be the rock guy.
Nope.
You got to be a guy who they go, yeah, oh yeah, that guy was a rock and roll type of guy, but he was great. You know, he talked about sex and he talked about this and the moon and a chair and a horse or whatever else.
Yeah, yeah, because I look at Kinison as the ultimate style. He was 100% rock and roll, but none of his bits were about rock and roll.
No.
But the guy lived rock. He played rock. He even did Wild Thing, and he was in the Bon Jovi video. He was all in the rock world. But when you went to see him, you knew he was rock. He didn't need to fucking talk about it. You know I'm rock and roll.
Right, at heart, he was just a preacher.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he really was.
Absolutely.
As a preacher, but the attitude was rock. Same with Dice, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Dice is a rocker through and through, but it was the attitude. It's like, I'm not even a comic. Like Dice always says, I don't like comics.
Yeah.
So when he liked me, that was the greatest day of my life, you know. But he's, here's a guy, you go to Madison Square Garden, he's the first one to sell it out. And you're like, this is not a comedy show. This is a rock show.
Yeah, yeah. I saw Dice when he was starting to become Dice at the store. And it's amazing because he recently started calling me on the phone because of Tracy Guns. I was like, you got to check this guy out. And he's calling me up. Yeah, it's Dice. And I was like, yeah, really? And he's like, yeah. And then he'll talk to me for like an hour on the phone.
Yeah.
And the... I guess 18-year-old of me is just losing my mind. Like, this is fucking Dice giving me pointers on comedy and shit, you know?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So how do you meet Dice and then start working with him, you know? So you get the classic Dice record. We all got it with the nursery rhyme. You see him on what, Rodney special.
And then on MTV when he got banned because I was working there at the time. And then, of course, tickets went on sale and he played the Beacon Theater in New York. And then the next time he played in New York, probably in less than a year, he was doing the Garden.
Right.
So, this guy was, the minute I saw him at the Beacon, I said, I always wanted to try comedy. I said, I got to do it.
Where do you go to try it?
Oh, I went with Florentine. It was some like redneck bar in South Jersey. It was miserable. I got like four mercy laughs, but that was all you needed.
Do you remember the bit?
No, they were terrible. I mean, it was like, Woody Allen jokes and...
Oh, you were just doing stock jokes?
Yeah, Madonna, like a virgin, really, all shitty stuff. So, but with Dice, it was, what ended up happening was Jim Florentine and Jim Norton.
Yeah.
I'll give a shout out to the Jersey comics because we really are such a tight-knit group, man. Like, we always helped each other out over the years,
Yeah.
And Jim met Dice out here one time and they were telling him lines from some of his CDs and stuff, and Dice didn't remember him. He was like, really? I said that on an album? And they go, yeah, yeah. And then he
The Day the Laughter Died?
Yeah, they made him go up on stage at the Comedy Store and do like The Day the Laughter Died.
Yeah.
But not without telling people. And he was and then he just loved him after that. Norton started open for him. Then when Norton started blowing up and, getting his own audience and couldn't do shows, he passed Jim on to him. And then that's how I ended up with him when Jim couldn't do shows. Then Dice called him up one day and he's like, who's the kid you hang out with? I don't know his name. The boy.
The boy.
Yeah. And he called me the boy for many years until he realized I was in my
40s.
Boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I went down and opened for him. It was funny, man.
Where was it?
At the Stress Factory in New Brunswick.
I had Rick Ingram on, who opened for him for a couple years also, said it was one of the most brutal openings. Now, were you opening for him when he's still massive or the backside?
No, the backside.
Gotcha.
But look, over the 10 years that I opened for him,
still,
man,
big, though.
You would still... we play theaters that do 1,500 people.
Totally.
But
that's fucking big. I tell people, they go, what? It's like a lot of bands when they go, whatever happened to that band? I go, really? man, they just came to town and did the wheel turn. Yeah. You know, they always say that to me about the Black Crowes when they were together for like 25 fucking years.
Yeah.
Those guys still around. It's like, yeah, dude, after you fucking lost interest on their hit record, they went on and put out masterpieces.
Right, yeah. But, you know, you'd always, you always will run into an old school Dice crowd.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I would always, especially when we play theaters, I would literally run to the microphone.
Yeah.
Because it was a huge stage, so I would run and he would crack him up. He would always laugh so hard because he just strolls out. He opens up a bottle of water. He takes a sip. He lights a cigarette.
Yeah.
He'll, you know, wipe himself with a towel. He'll move the stool like 1 inch.
They're there for him.
Yeah, just to piss. He would do it to piss me off. He goes, I moved it 1 inch just to waste more time because he knew it would drive me crazy.
Ah.
He goes, because you run to the mic. I go, but Dice, you got to understand, you don't have to open for you.
Yeah.
I do. And if I don't get to that mic before someone yells out, you fucking suck.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yep. Yep.
So
they've already won.
They've already won.
Because the next guy goes, yeah, he does suck. Boo, boo, boo. You know, you haven't even started.
Yeah, and we had a few of those nights
over
there.
You're better out with a wireless in your hand on the side. They go, welcome out, Don James. And you just come out. So I'm out there on the fucking street, right? You know, they can't even get you.
I'm already two jokes in before I'm even outside of the curtain.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But no, he's been amazing to me, man. And to give me that kind of boot camp in front of his crowds.
Yeah.
Really incredible, man. He's been so generous. And
he is a good dude.
Yeah.
He calls me up, like, I'd say once a month, and he'll just he'll give me pointers, you know? So I haven't seen you yet, but I looked at a video. Why so angry? I'm like, what do you mean, man? You're angry. Yeah. And he goes, yeah, but why are you angry? You know what I mean?
That's a good point.
He wants to know why.
He knows why he's angry.
Yeah.
He wants to know why you're angry.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, man. I love it. I've been so lucky in this business, and I guess you have too, where you have these incredible friends like Jim Norton. I got Burr and Marin and Ian Edwards and these guys and Eric Griffin, where they really are like, hey, man, you know, that sucks. Or this is great. You're doing good. Keep fucking going. You know, whenever you get really down, they go, dude, it's terrible. But then it'll be great. And they're right. Everything they've said has been right.
Yeah.
You know?
Florentine, you know, Florentine's great with that. I mean, he's like, you got another set tomorrow. Don't worry about it, you know. Because we only worry about the sets that suck. You know, we have 100 great sets in a row. You know, no comic ever killed and ran back to the hotel room and rewrote their whole act.
Nope.
But when you eat shit, I'm going to my hotel and rewriting 10 punchlines on every joke.
Yeah.
Because that's what motivates you. You got to have a crappy night once in a while.
I think that's what eating it's for. I was telling a guy that last night, a newer comic named Ari Manis. He's a friend of mine. He works at the store. And he goes, man, I bombed so fucking bad tonight. He did a teen tour at the Hollywood Improv where it's kids. You know, like in their 13, 14, 15, whatever. They do it all summer where you perform for high school kids and shit. I go, yeah, but remember when you were in high school? You're like, fuck this guy. Doesn't matter if the guy's 2 years older. You're like, this old man.
Yeah.
Whatever. You know, he's like, I bombed so bad. And I go, when you bomb, I think it's those are the guys that become great comics. They go home and work. And the ones that bomb and don't do anything, they just start to slither away.
You learn.
You learn.
That's when you learn, man. I mean, I supported my... There was about a 4-year stretch, man, where I paid my rent by doing colleges, and I hated every minute of it because, you know, that was, you know, probably like late 90s when the PC generation had started.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you know, if you have 5 18-year-old girls sitting in the front row and they just hear a little buzzword and you get done with a joke and you just hear, oh.
Yeah.
And then all the 18-year-old guys who are trying to, you know, have sex with these girls, they're not going to laugh because the girls aren't
laughing.
Yeah,
they don't want to look creepy.
And this is noon at a cafeteria at, you know, Elmira College that you just drove 7 hours to get to.
Now, how did you get that gig? Did you audition for the, what is it, NAFTA?
Yeah, I did the NACA thing. Yeah.
So you auditioned for that, and with your act, you passed, huh? Did you just do like a clean, safe act so you can get into the money roll?
Yeah.
I see a lot of guys get into that college thing, and it's a lot like cruise ships, and they just disappear from the business.
Gone.
And I always say, like, if you're a fucking slave to that money, you're an idiot, because I'd rather sell motorcycles than work a cruise ship where they're giving you these rules, or a fucking college where they're going, hey, you can't do this and that. I didn't get into comedy for rules.
Yeah.
Rules are for like working at fucking IBM. Yeah. Understand? You know what I mean? I got into comedy because of no rules, of outlaws like Dice and Kinison and CK and Burr and those guys, where it's just like, wow. You know?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, I was still a nightclub comic, but yeah. Look, I was, you know, I was living in Manhattan, man. I had to pay Manhattan rent. And you
I get it.
You know, you make $1,200 to go do a college. So, you know what? You eat shit for an hour and you suck it up and you get your check and you go home. And, you know, if I did, you know, six colleges a year, you know, I was doing okay and I could get by. But when I didn't have to do it anymore, it was so great. I never did a cruise ship now until recently. Now that everything's come full circle,
well, that's
the Monsters of Rock cruise.
Well, that's different.
I could go on there and
that's
I could do
different.
My thing. Yeah.
That's way different.
Yeah, yeah.
That I'm talking about those cruise ships. I once met a great comic about 3 years ago. I learned a lot of lessons from Louis and Burr and all this, but I remember an episode of Louis, the TV show, where they're going out on they're on the highway on the outskirts of Manhattan there, and the cruise ships are parked. And the daughter goes, "Daddy, what's that?" And he goes, "That's a cruise ship." And they go, "What goes on there?" And he goes, "It's a, you know, they go on vacation. Sometimes they have like entertainment and stuff, like comedians." And they go, "Daddy, do you ever perform on a cruise ship?" And he's like, "Nah, Daddy's not a boat act." And when I heard that term, boat act, I was like, "Oh, that must be something bad."
Yeah.
And then I met this comic. I was doing a show at the Ice House, and the guy went on, and he was fucking great, but he was miserable. When he got off, I go, "Dude, you're great. I've never heard of you. I do comedy every night. I never see you anywhere. Where are you from?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm here. I stepped on a boat 3 years ago and didn't get off." And I was like, "What?" And he goes, "I got fucking caved into the $3,000 a week, and 3 years of my career went by, and now I'm starting over." And, you know, he got a little, it's like prison almost. He got a little taste of the outside life and went right back to that ship, you know?
Yeah, same with colleges.
Yeah.
I had a buddy, same thing, man. He was super funny comic. He was a nightclub comic, but he was relatively clean, and he got wired in. I didn't see him for a decade, man.
Yeah.
You know, so, and he did good for himself, but, you know, you end up writing specifically for that, for the crews or for the colleges.
I'm not knocking it either,
but you do get,
yeah.
But your writing goes in that direction, and then you go into a nightclub and you can't play there.
You get ate alive. I don't knock it. I used to knock it like, what a fucking, but now it's like, hey, whatever you're in it for, you're in it for. For me, it's totally different. I'm in it for the, you know,
the art.
I'm in it for the art and just love to do it. And whatever comes from it is you know, something different. But yeah, man, but I'd love to do one of those rock cruises, because then you're in front of just a rock crowd. Now, you did the Monsters of Rock one. Who was with you? Was Jim with you, or Big J Orkison, or anybody?
No, I mean, we do the festival that we all do is Rock on the Range.
I know that one.
And then, yeah, they have a proper comedy tent, and Jay was on.
Is that any good?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah?
They treat the comics great. And on the Monsters of Rock cruise, like, I'm really the only other I'm the only comic on there, but they let me go play up on the main stage on the pool and do my rock and roll stuff. And so it's cool that, look, now after all these years of being like, yeah, I don't want to be a boat act, I am, but on my own terms.
But that's so different.
Yeah.
And I mean, I would do that in a minute.
Yeah.
And I would get shirts made that said boat act.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For fun.
Just yeah. I want to go play Sturgis. You know, I want to play, you know, like there's so many other outlets now you can play, man. It's not just about the clubs. But yeah, at the end of the day, that's what we are.
My favorite is small theater. 400 to 700, like those small theaters in middle America that you go in and you go, wow, this place is beautiful. And they've kept it up, and you go in there and the whole town shows up, like in Missoula, Montana. And you roll in and they're there, and you just fucking have this bond, man. And you move to the next city. Those small theaters are great, man.
Yeah. Doing the ones with Dice over the years, man. You do. It's just such a different animal, you know?
Yeah.
Because you're not doing crowd work, and you just have, your material has to stand on its own, man. And you got to captivate a whole room. The timing's different. Everything's different about it. And you're on this big, beautiful stage. I mean, I just stand still, you know? I'm not, I don't need the whole stage, but it is a different vibe, and it's really cool, and it really does force you to sort of be centered and get your material out, spread it out to everybody all at the same time.
What I love about it is the people are out for an event. when it's in a club, they're like, we're in a club. The guy can't be that big. He's here, and they're drinking and texting and talking or whatever.
Yeah.
But when it's a theater, it's like date night. They've bought the tickets. They've got some cool clothes on. They're going out. They're ready to laugh. And they're focused on the show. There's no check drop. There's no drink orders. There's no bullshit.
Yeah.
It's pure comedy. And that's my favorite thing of doing comedy. I'm starting to do all the different types now. Like, I just started open for Alice in Chains on tour.
Oh, cool, yeah. Man.
And that's a whole different animal.
Yeah, it is.
But what I love about that is being back into the rock and roll world, man, after 25 years of playing rock and then being away from it for a while. It's like, oh, I miss this, you know?
Yeah.
The city to city to city, the bus, the talks, the set change, the sound checks, the catering, all that, the burnout vibe, the high of the rock. It's such an animal, you know?
Yeah, I'm about to do a month with Faster Pussycat, man. Get on the bus with those guys and go across the country and back, and you know, doing comedy, man. And they, you know, I opened some dates on the East Coast with them, and we just said, yeah, this is a great fit, man, so let's do it. It's their 30th year anniversary, and instead of taking another band out who's going to drink all their booze and fuck all their chicks,
yeah,
like, oh, let's bring Jameson out. He's a moderate drinker, and you know,
yeah,
he can't bang all our girls, so
yeah.
And it's a cool fit because they're, you know, they're a funny band too, you know.
Yep. Yeah. And so Tammy's such a great guy.
Yeah, yeah. Tammy's awesome.
You know what I love about Tammy is he is an absolute fucking real deal, dude. The guy never stopped. He's never stopped, man. And that set they did last year at the Cat House, Irvine, you weren't there, but I saw, it was fucking great. And I've seen him a bunch. I saw him at Vamp like 6 months ago, and they were fucking great. He is a star, man.
They're the real deal. You're right. He's never not, you know, he's never Gustav.
Nope.
Which is his real name. He's always Tammy.
Yeah.
You know, whether he's just standing on the sidewalk smoking a cigarette, riding his motorcycle with Ricky Rackman, or up on stage. And you got to respect that, man.
Let's talk about the first time you opened for a band. Do you remember? Because I just did it. It was three nights ago. And it's so different. Who did you open up for? And how did you call for advice? Like, I called people, you know?
Well, we did a thing with Twisted Sister in New York when we were doing that metal show. And they filmed it, actually, for the show. And Jim and I opened for Twisted Sister.
Wow. So that's your first time opening for a band then?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, like a big band. And, yeah, man, you know, a couple thousand people. And it was funny, man. Like 5 minutes before we're about to start, Dee Snider says, hey, listen, guys, this is a, you know, it's like, this is more of a Christmas show because it's around the Christmas time.
Yeah.
And goes, do me a favor, just don't curse.
Oh, what?
And Jim and I are like, D, we learned to curse on stage from you.
Yeah, fuck yeah, man. You know, I'm an SMF.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. You
hilarious.
Know, your fans are called the sick motherfucking friends of
hilarious.
Twisted Sister.
Hilarious.
And so, you know, man, you're going up in front of a rock crowd. You want all the bullets in the gun.
You
man.
Gotta have, oh yeah. And if you're not, they're like, what's going on here?
Yeah. So my first maybe 30 seconds was clean. And then I just unleashed the beast.
Yeah.
And, you know, and both of us killed, yeah. You know, and then we go downstairs. And
were you pretty nervous though?
Way like, nervous.
Yeah, me too. And I've done over 3,000 shows, but it was such a fucking different beast because you walk on, the lights go out, and it's like rock and roll, you know? Everything's like high octane. It's not like quiet and ready for you to do comedy.
Yeah, I liken it to like the early days when you would play like in bars, not comedy clubs at all.
You're so right.
Yeah, you go play a bar where, you know, they'd have to, you know, the playoff game would still be on. They wouldn't shut the TVs off. The mic barely worked. You're standing on a case of beer as a stage. And the people in the crowd, they don't even know there's a comedy show. And you got to go out and win them over. That's like opening for a rock band.
Yeah. How many minutes did you do?
I did like 15 minutes.
Right.
Yeah. No, it went good. You know, look, I've been lucky. You know, at least with that metal show, you know, I probably got a good 5 minute grace period.
You got a padding because they're like, this guy.
Oh, yeah, we know this guy. Yeah. But then if you, you know, after 5 minutes, you know.
They're done. They're like, all right, you better make me laugh or I'm turning around drinking my beer and talking to this guy.
Yeah. So we went backstage afterwards and Dee's like, I didn't get to watch it. How did it go? We're like, oh, squeaky clean. It was great. Don't worry about it. So I've opened for them since a couple times, man, and they're great guys. So
you open for a lot of bands.
Yeah, I try to, man. You know, I do that thing with
Dizzy Reed.
Dizzy Reed and Hookers and Blow. We go on tour together and do stuff.
Do they draw anybody when they're out there?
Yeah, it depends on where we go. You know, it's cool with, you know, since I've been doing like the last 3 years with these guys, they played a lot of places they haven't played before.
Right.
So, yeah, so now we're just, you know, we're waiting for Dizzy to get done with his little side bands.
Yeah.
Guns N' Roses, whatever.
That thing's not going to last.
No.
Yeah, right. I love when people say that, like, oh, it's so great how they're defeated. Axl, always people don't think that he's smart, but he's one of the most genius guys in the world, all the way down to disappearing for years, being the Howard Hughes of rock, and not putting that record out, knowing that, you know, whatever he put out, they were going to just shoot it down. And, you know, and now going to complete left of everybody. Oh, they're going to be on 4 hours late. Oh, he's going to sound like shit. And just see you later, all that. You know?
And now he's literally going on early every
night.
Going
on early.
The voice is insane. Now he's in AC/DC. He didn't want to be in his own band for a while. Now he's in AC/DC and Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
It's like
he's picking up armies of money. I mean, we're talking about a guy who made a record in 1988, you know, that changed the world.
Yeah, 87, yeah.
87, 88, and then the Illusion records, and then basically gone, you know.
Yeah.
On paper, that is, you know, we know 80 dudes like that from the metal show that once, there's dudes that never, ever, ever could get it going again with hit songs.
Yeah.
You know, Winger, we could name them all.
Crash and Burn, you know.
Yeah, and look at this guy. That's how much of an outlaw and impact he had on the world. And it's like Slayer and Metallica, where it spilled down into the kids. The dad was like, listen to this one. And now the kids were their kids. Listen to this one, you know?
Well, you know what it is? It's for me, it's mystique.
Yeah,
rock stars don't have mystique anymore because every rock star is on Twitter or Instagram or Snapchat or on Facebook, and you have direct access. And so there's no mystique to anybody anymore. But Axl's always kept that, you know? Mick Mars from Motley Crue, same thing.
Total mystique.
When we had him on our show, I mean, I always hate saying this because I don't want to ruin the guy's street cred.
Yeah.
He's one of the sweetest guys you'll ever meet in your life. But he's in a band with three other guys who love talking way more than he does. So they always did interviews. So what happened over the years is because Mick is kind of dark and kind of, you know, spooky looking,
yep,
and you never heard him talk, it became a mystique that he was like this dark creature.
Yeah.
And it really drew people to him a lot more. But the truth is, he's a really sweet guy. He loves doing interviews. But, you know, when you're a Motley and you got Vince and Nikki and Tommy all trying to hog the microphone, he's just like, all right, I'll just play my guitar and that'll be it.
It's crazy, man. Mystique is like, it's great because I'm out with Alice in Chains and I'm like, I'll put this up on Instagram or whatever, and they're like, yeah, we don't fuck with that shit.
Well, but they have a history of mystique with their old singer, so
absolutely
that will always be attached to them.
It's so great though. What I love is, my dream is to have no social media presence. Of course, I would love just to be on the podcast and then you come see the shows. Unfortunately, I'm 6.5 years in on comedy and I got to be on there, a 50-year-old man. I do like, talking to fans and stuff back and forth. And also I like sharing what I'm into, like cars and guitars and jackets and whatever, you know, rock. But there comes a point to where, like Peter Grant with Zeppelin, you want to see this band, you got to pay to see them. You know, they're not going to play Johnny Carson. They're not going to play, Don Kirsch's rock concert. They're not doing midnight special. Mm-hmm. You go see them. And I like that because it makes it an event. It's not about, ooh, you pay to see me. That's not what it's about. It's about, here we are now. I'm going to come out. You're going to see me. Like when we saw bands back in the day, remember, we just had Circus Magazine and you'd be like, look at that jacket he wears. And then you go live and see him.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And you'd buy the tickets like months out, you know, and you would just wait all, like, you know, yeah. I remember for Judas Priest, Screaming for Vengeance, I think I bought my tickets in like April and then the concert wasn't until September.
Did you ever keep checking to make sure it was there? I used to do that.
Oh, always.
I'd keep looking
the
like,
whole
okay,
summer.
All right. I go, still there.
Still
okay,
in the
good
drawer. Okay. All All right.
Wow, right?
They booked two. Okay, two tickets are still there. Good, okay. It's okay. It's only May. Shit. Damn, yeah. This is a long time coming. And so when you went to the concert, you just exploded, and you were so into it. Nowadays, people go on, they go to setlist.com, they look at the set list, they go to YouTube, and they see the concert they played a couple nights before. Ah, he didn't sound that good that night. I'm not going
to
buy tickets.
And then they complain, oh, they're not playing these songs. To me, the most mystique thing about a concert was the set list and the opening song.
Bingo.
The opening song. I know Screaming for Vengeance, when they walked on and did the Hellion and then go into Electric Eye, and Rob Halford came up in the full leather with the hat and the whip and shit up here in space, I'm looking down on you, I get goosebumps, my mind fucking lost it, that is one of the best tours ever to go off.
Yeah, and guys, you know, I'm probably, you know, a lot of people listening to your podcast are somewhere in our age range or could at least appreciate what we're talking about, but you know, like even at Rock in the Range last year when Priest played, and I went, and Mark Tremonti from, you know, Alter Breed and Creed, yeah, and he does, yeah, his own band. He goes, I really want to go stand out in the crowd and watch Priest.
Yeah.
Like old school.
Yeah.
And I go, I'll go out there with you, man, you know? That'll be great. And what did we do? What's the first thing we did when we found like a spot where we weren't going to get like, you know, bombarded with people and stuff, where we had a good spot to see? What do you think they'll open with?
Yeah.
And it's like, we're both doing our own thing in our life, you know, like we're adults and stuff, but we became 13 instantly.
Yeah, yeah, man. I never missed the first song. I almost would rather not see the show than miss the first song. It's so weird to me because that is when the adrenaline and all the shit hits me.
It sets the tone for the night.
The fucking lights go out. A couple weird firecrackers go off. You see some weed smoke. And then all of a sudden, whatever it is, you know, and then there they are. You're like, wow, especially with Maiden or Priest, you know, it's like, holy shit.
Right. Because the visual is so big, and we just stood there the whole night. Go, do you think they're going to play Painkiller? Or I don't know. The last tour, I don't think they played it. So let's say, he played it. Yeah. And then is he going to be able to hit the notes? And then he hits the notes, and you just, it transports you back in time. And it's so cool, man.
What do you think the best concert is you ever saw? Can you do it?
Yeah, easy. AC/DC, what was it, 2009, the Black Ice Tour.
Wow!
Yeah.
Wow, that's a great tour. Now, when I saw him here, where did you see him, in Jersey?
Yeah, at Giant Stadium.
When I saw him here, it was at the Forum, and Brian Johnson's father had passed away like a few days before. So he was off for a few days, and when he came back, his voice was crushing because he hadn't sang in like 5 days. So he was just killing, and that train, there's a great opening. The train came out.
Right, 90-foot, whole lot of inflatable, whole lot of Rosie.
Oh, man.
And he probably had all that stuff built up in him, and he just put it into his voice.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the greatest tour because it's just like 22 songs, you know, every single one of them, inside and out. Angus, you know, still at his age, just doing what he's doing. And this when they came around the last time around without Phil Rudd and without Malcolm, I was like, you know what? Don't need to see it.
Wow, you didn't go. I saw it 3 times. And what?
Because I'm like, why do I need to see? I already saw the greatest AC/DC concert.
Yeah.
Other than the ones with Bond, because I never got to see him with Bond.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see him with Axl, but I didn't need to see him again without the other guys, because I'm like, it was so good. I always want to have that memory.
I'm going to go to the Garden and see Axl with AC/DC.
Yeah, I'll probably be there.
Yeah. Cliff Williams is leaving the band.
Yeah.
And, my thoughts on that are like Brian probably said, "Hey man, I can do it. I'm back going." And Angus probably said, "Nah." And then Cliff, being tight with Brian, probably went, "It's kind of done. I don't want to keep going out."
Yeah.
We did these makeup dates. This is how I feel. And now let's finish these, and I'm gonna bow out. What do you think on that?
That's what it sounds like. You know, I had this theory, half joking around, but I was
Mark Evans comes back.
No, it was with the Axl thing was like that. He gets the Guns thing up and running again. Then he goes out and tours with AC/DC, blows out his voice, can't do the rest of the Guns dates, and then Brian Johnson fills in for him in Guns N' Roses.
That'd be hilarious, right? Now Brian just announced he's got a TV show coming on. Where he's going to interview producers.
Well, yeah, I know he did a car show for a while and all that stuff. Yeah. And so, look, he's 66. He's enjoying it, man.
I love him, man. I heard Eddie Trunk talk a little bit about it, and I agree with him. It's unbelievable how he was out, and people were just like, yeah, this is all cool. Like, they just, like, it was just nothing. And I tell people, when you YouTube Brian Johnson Japan Back in Black Tour and watch that show, and also watch the MTV, those about the rock tour, we're talking about an iconic vocalist, man. This guy was fucking unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, I worship Bon. I got him tattooed on me. But I also worship Back in Black, those about to rock, and Flick of the Switch. Beyond, you know, I think they're and me being a singer, they're some of the best performances ever done, man. You know,
I heard Eddie Trunk told me you nailed some AC/DC at a karaoke one time.
Yeah,
man.
Not karaoke. I sang with a live band in Vegas. Yeah, yeah,
he nailed it.
Yeah. He even said on his radio show, he goes, I mean, they should get Dean Del Rey, you know? Yeah. And people were hitting me up like, whoa.
I was throwing that out there, too. I was like, Dean Del Rey, Jim Brewer.
Yeah.
You know, and that was kind of fun. But, yeah, it was sad, like, that a lot of people were just dismissing Brian, like, oh, okay, so he's not in anymore.
Like, it was nothing.
Because they see the logo, and they go, okay, we like, okay, Angus and the logo, and he pulls his pants down, and we know the songs.
Yeah,
and
isn't
it's
that
weird,
crazy?
Man, you know, but look, that's up to people, man, if they're going to go buy the tickets.
I got it, yeah.
I prefer not to. I like to remember bands a certain way, depending on where I hold them.
Yeah.
You know, I told you, AC/DC is one of my top five, so I hold them to a higher standard than a band that would be in my... you know, 25 to 50.
Yeah.
You know, them I might go, you know what, just because I love the songs, I go see them with one or two original members.
Yeah, yeah.
AC/DC, Sabbath, those have to be held to a bigger standard.
You're so right. I saw that secretly, before Axl said they auditioned a cover band singer, an AC/DC cover band singer for, I think, North Carolina or something.
Yeah.
And he tells the whole story online about it, where they flew him out. He was supposed to do three songs. He ends up singing 2 hours with him. I watched that guy, and he is fucking great. I wish I knew his name. I'd give him the props. But he does half the show Bon. And he's got the Bond move and the Bond fucking thing. And then he does half the show Brian. He comes out and he puts the hat on.
Wow.
And he sounds... he does both of them, man. Wow. And they're incredible.
Right. And then didn't he say, like... And then I was, you know, like, they said what a great job I did. And I walked out the door and I see Axl Rose, like, getting out of a limo or something. And he goes, and I knew it was over then. But
it didn't matter. Yeah. He got to sing 2 hours. Fronting AC/DC with his guitar player who flew out there with him or drove him there or whatever. They're just in there like, holy shit, you just sang with AC/DC for 2 hours. That's all you need, because now that has solidified his cover band for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. He's going to be able to make crazy money like the guy that auditioned, you know?
Yeah.
He's really good. Yeah. He's really good. There's some good guys out there. Well, fuck, you ready for tonight?
Let's do it, man.
Yeah, now.
Yeah, the Whiskey A Go-Go, that's another thing, man. It's, you know, I know people in L.A. get jaded, and they go, oh, the Sunset Strip ain't what it used to be, and maybe that's true, but, you know, for me, the Whiskey A Go-Go is a legendary place.
Yeah.
So to have even played it once, for me, was a great honor. Now coming back a second time, even better, man.
I think the Sunset Strip is still got it. You know, people put it down or whatever. Yeah, they're putting up all the apartments and the hotels or whatever. But that thread there of the Rainbow, Roxy, and Whiskey, and Viper Room. I give fucking hats off to Viper Room. Even though it's different owners and all that, there's still bands playing in there 7 nights a week. People going for their dream, setting up that gear, fighting in the van and fucking breaking guitar strings and playing out of tune and going for that dream.
Yeah. So, yeah, for the people who live out here, you know, I get it. But, you know, to me, these places mean something. They're iconic to me.
How did you never move out here before we go? How did you not move out to L.A.?
You know, I'm an East Coast guy. I mean, I didn't have anything against it. I just was always like, if I can make a living on the East Coast, I'll do it. And if I got to move out there, then, you know, what's the worst that could happen? You know, I live down by the beach, you know. Nice weather, and you know, I'll make it happen. But yeah, I mean, I just kept working in New York, and then when we did that metal show, we only came out here for a couple weeks at a time, and then went home. So I never had to make the permanent move.
Right. Yeah, it's strange because rock has such an impact on me that I wanted to be in the fucking boiler, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, this is it right here, you know? It's
absolutely
funny.
Man. Yeah. So, but, you know, it's a, you know, a little bit of a different sensibility out here, but yeah. But it's all good, you know? I mean,
yeah,
there's great comics out here. There's great comics on the East Coast.
Hell and, yeah, there are. Hell
and
yeah.
The same with bands. So,
you know, do the clubs when you're home, when you're not on the road? Do you go out to New York and still do the clubs?
Yeah, I keep my foot in the door over there, you know?
Where do you go?
You know, the comic strip, the stand once in a while, you know? So, I just keep trying to keep myself honest. Just, you know, I lived in Manhattan 15 years, and I live in Jersey again, so I don't go as much
house?
As I used to. Bought a house, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Comedy's good for you.
We're getting there.
What's a house cost where you live?
You know, a couple of bucks. Yeah, just a little beach in Jersey, man. A little,
like Jersey Shores?
Yeah, a little half a square mile, like little beach town. I love it, man. It's really cool. Yeah.
How far to the city?
Like 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, not bad.
I take a ferry in, man. It's cool.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's so cool.
Ride the ferry in, then take the ferry home, just ride on the water and, you know, just zen out and listen to the waves at night and, you know, just it brings you back into perspective, man.
Yeah, and you're single?
Single, yeah. Bought a house for me and my girlfriend. And now I live in a house that's way too big for me by myself, but it's all good, brother. Yeah.
You got any animals?
No animals, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a snake a few years ago, but man. Yeah.
Yeah,
I was trying to be like Kerry King. Yeah, but he's got like 200 of them.
God, I saw his thing on TV, like his herbatory or whatever, you know, just he raises all these snakes.
Snakatory, yeah.
That's crazy.
He loves
right?
that stuff, yeah. So, but yeah. No, it's good. Life's good, man.
All right, man. Great to finally have you
Let's
on.
Let's kick ass this tonight. And yeah, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, I'm going to be in New York in late July, early August doing shows. We'll hang out.
Absolutely.
It'll be fun.
All right, brother.
All right. Thanks. Thank you so much for doing the show. Oh, you got a website or anything?
DonJameson.com.
Same with Instagram and Twitter?
Real Don Jameson on Twitter.
Cool. All right. Thank you so much. There you guys go, man. Follow him. And candles lit.